We're glad you're along for Current State for a Wednesday at the end of every month. It's the last day of April. We take a look at, back at the biggest news stories of the previous 30 days, and to help us put those in context, the host of Off the Record on WKAR-TV and other Michigan public TV stations, Tim Skubick. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Mark.
MLive Capital reporter Jonathan Osting. Jonathan, good to see you.
Likewise.
And editor of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter, Susan Demas. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Mark.
An interesting dispute has been simmering over what statewide assessment Michigan students will be taking next school year. There's significant momentum for a new exam, the Smarter Balanced Assessment, which the Department of Education and a number of others support, but some conservative members of the legislature, including State Rep Tom McMillan, want to put a hold on the MEAP test, which opponents suggest is so 2002. Can we put this dispute into some kind of perspective for our listeners?
Well, this is once again, Mark, the attempts by lawmakers to micromanage the education system, and it's all about testing. We want to do testing of teachers. We want to do testing of kids so we can evaluate the teachers. We want to do testing of kids so we can evaluate the kids. And the question is, what vehicle do you use to get there? MEAP for 1,000 years has been that vehicle. When they passed the Common Core stuff, people who were supported Common Core said we need a new testing mechanism, smart balance, which sounds like a margarine to me and not a test.
I think it is, actually.
But I digress. I'm not sure if there's a relationship between the two or not. But they say this is this would be done on the computer. The kids would take the test on the computer. The problem is some of the conservatives, Tom McMillan et al., saying, no, let's not go there. And so the education superintendent, Mr. Flanagan, says, let's do that. I talked to Bill Rogers, who's the chair of the K-12 budget subcommittee. He says the clock has run out. There is no money in the budget to do it. But we have the formation of a business group this week trying to put the arm on lawmakers to do something. So there we are.
Well, I have read, I've seen reports that say that the budget passed by the House is contingent on continuing the MEAP.
Yeah, it is. There's a line item in there. The Senate seemed to put some language in their appropriations bill as well that would at least limit who can, the company that can actually conduct the test. I'd just say this is an extension of the Common Core debate from last year. It's about who sets the standards and then how those standards are tested. So it was actually state governors who came up with the Common Core standards.
Right.
But critics like Tom McMillan view this as, sort of a federal mandate. And the Smarter Balanced Test would be developed to meet those Common Core standards. About 26 states would be participating. Michigan wouldn't have final say in what questions appear on the test, and McMillan thinks we should have that ability.
But what's really, I would say, most dramatic about this is you've got Michael Flanagan, the head of the MDE, saying pretty unequivocally, we're not going back to the MEAP. So we've got two groups of people heading in what appears to be exactly the opposite directions.
And Mike Flanagan believes that we have some education funding in jeopardy if we actually keep the MEAP. So there's a financial incentive for Michigan to move on to something else. It's kind of interesting because there's now this affection for the MEAP, and for years, many people from all sorts of political perspectives were very critical of it. Like any test, it's imperfect. But because it's gotten wrapped up in this Common Core controversy, I think that a lot of people more on the conservative end are now developing a newfound affection for it.
Well, there is time to work this out between now and the end of June or the end of May, whenever they want to get the budget done, if they can get on the same page. Well, in the meantime, the clock is ticking. They have to have something in place for testing next fall. Because, goodness gracious, we couldn't have the kids go to school without being tested when they come back. So we'll see how they work this out.
But the Smarter Balanced is scheduled to take place in the spring, as I
yes.
understand it here. The MEAP has always taken place in the fall, but the Smarter Balanced would take place in the spring.
Well, and the argument is that there are so many students that lose knowledge over the summer, and so it's not really a great time to be testing them in
right.
the fall. And so in the spring, with the cumulative knowledge that they've hopefully built up, that would be a more accurate assessment.
Tim, you alluded to this a minute ago, but pretty influential supporters of Smarter Balanced, around 40, according to MERS, are joining forces to overcome this resistance, the Detroit Regional Chamber, Business Leaders for Michigan, the Grand Rapids Chamber. What kind of impact could this full court press, as MERS put it, have on the opposition?
Well, this is the same group that has for 2 years or longer said, let's do something to fix the roads. So their power in the legislature is
questionable.
That would be generous.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to, speaking of roads, let's turn to Thank you for that.
That's okay, no charge.
Let's turn to the ongoing debate over road repairs as pothole season deepens, if that's appropriate. The public is sounding more and more unequivocal about its support for investment in roads. How is this playing out in the legislature?
Lawmakers, who were on a legislative spring break came back a week or two ago now and said basically we heard from our constituents they want us to focus on roads more than tax relief, which was another big issue that's been percolating in Lansing. So House Speaker Jay Spolger has a plan he said would eventually result in up to about $500 million in ongoing funding for roads. Lawmakers are actually debating parts of that package as we speak this morning. A House committee is taking up two bills that would dedicate a portion of use tax and sales tax revenue that's collected at the pump to roads.
Now, Speaker Bolger's proposal was put out on the table 3.5 weeks ago. It was one of the first few days of the month. Does it mean anything that it's taken this long to get anywhere with that?
No, they're actually moving fairly quick on
it. Okay.
I mean, lawmakers were out of town for the better part of the past few weeks, so they are, in fact, taking up these bills in committee pretty much as soon as they can. Whether they advance, what that debate will look like is yet to be seen.
And what's happened to the discussion over tax relief? Has that just gone by the wayside?
It has definitely dissipated a bit, but there are always stalwarts like Senator Jack Brandenburg of Macomb County. This has been his baby since he got basically into the legislature, and he would still like to perhaps trade that for support for the Educational Achievement Authority. He's looking for any way to revive it.
And I believe Senator Brandenburg shared that with you, Tim Skubick, first.
That in 25 cents you can buy a cup of coffee. Okay,
but he
that's
was
about what the tax relief would get.
That would be, in fact, it's a little less than that, isn't it?
But he was pretty candid with you about that.
He was extremely candid.
Yeah, he went on camera with you on this.
And I gave him an out. I said, Senator, you don't have to do this. He said, no, come on, let's go back, let's do it. I said, hey, I'm game to roll the cameras, guys. And he basically said, let's vote trade, Governor. Come on, man. If you want my yes vote on the EAA, give me $100 million for income tax relief, and we're there. And then I went to the horse trader himself, and he said, oh, trade? Well, you know what? If he wants to get stuff in the legislature, he's going to have to do a little. If they're not horses, it's going to be something else. I think at the end of the day, they do pass this thing, and I'm picking up soundings this morning and talking to one key legislator that they may actually try to add to this package with an actual revenue increase of some sort that could happen between now and the end of this session. So stay tuned on this one.
A half billion dollars a year, $500 million.
Sounds like a lot of money, doesn't it?
Well, it does.
It's about four potholes in the driveway of the majority leader in Monroe.
Sure. It's what did the governor call for? $1.3 billion?
Yeah, and outside groups have said the need could be as high as $2 billion. Bolger's package, as Tim mentioned, doesn't actually include new revenue. It just redirects revenue. The state has already, in recent years, been kicking in general fund dollars to meet a federal match. Bolger's plan would essentially make that ongoing money and then kick a little bit in on top. But it's not the grand bargain, I guess, on
and
this issue
yearly,
that people are looking for.
It's not just $1.2 billion the first year. It's
right.
Okay, it's over a period
over two
of
years.
Right, and that was even before this latest pothole season, which, has wreaked havoc on all of us. Bolger's plan is pretty much cold patching, as they say in the industry.
You know, I think the speaker deserves credit for putting this on the table. The usual rubric is the governor proposes and the legislature disposes. Now, the governor's been around the track on this thing and has made some suggestions which have gone nowhere. And Bulger sort of came in and filled in the void during the break and said, let's try this on for size.
Well,
and he got the talks restarted, I think.
Remember last year when Snyder was very specific and said, here are all the tax increases and fee increases that I like. That went over terribly. So since then, he's been very reticent, and it is Jace Bulger who's kind of picking up the baton on that.
It's interesting to look at the politics probably involved in as to where road repairs are taking place. Can we anticipate just a whole lot more repairs in majority Republican districts than in Democratic districts?
Well, there is another $115 million out there. They haven't dedicated that money just yet. They're still developing the list and where those monies are going to go. Last time around, the last 115 or so did end up going to primarily majority Republican districts. However, that got some headlines recently, and maybe there's a little bit of incentive now for Republicans who know that doesn't look good to invite Democrats to at least be part of that discussion. So we'll see how it plays out this time around.
Another of April's most memorable stories involved, again, Speaker Bulger, who proposed last week that money from Detroit municipal unions be added to the funds to address Detroit's bankruptcy, to soften the blow to union members impacted and to insure against a DIA art sale. Here is Speaker Bulger justifying his proposal to the Detroit Free Press. He's talking about the various stakeholders involved in resolving the Detroit bankruptcy.
The taxpayers who pay the bills that management and these decisions make, the unions that organized these, negotiated these contracts, and their members, their retirees, who are at the table and they are making sacrifice within the offer of settlement. But thus far, of those four, the only one missing are the union organizations themselves. And they put money into their savings account. They received dues from those contracts. Those contracts, they were unaffordable. And I think it's perfectly reasonable to ask that they step up just like everybody else.
Again, thanks to the Free Press for that audio. Remind us of the response to Jace Bulger's proposal. How did this go over?
So far, even Rick Snyder has kind of not acknowledged it very much. Obviously, the unions are not very pleased with it.
The governor described it as challenging.
Right. So clearly, he's not on the same page as his House Speaker is. You know, it's being perceived as kind of a last-minute monkey wrench in negotiations. And Kevin Orr, the emergency manager, has been out trying to build relationships and talk with people at the Capitol. He'll be back again to do that. And he, you know, is kind of proceeding around this proposal from the House Speaker just to try and get support for what most people thought was a consensus.
How many people are on board with Bulger's proposal, though? Is that known?
Well, what's not known is if unions are, and that's the big one. If he decides not to hold a vote because unions don't contribute, that's all that matters. Randy Richardville said that's not, he's not as adamant about a union contribution. The governor, it's not on his agenda. Some House Republicans said, you know, it sounds like a reasonable request. And it sounds like Bulger is, you know, thinking that that could actually make the package an easier sell in the Republican-led House. Mm-hmm. Yesterday he was asked if he would, you know, no vote if there's no union money. And he didn't flat out say that, but he said it would be a glaring omission if they weren't part of the grand bargain that we're asking members to vote on.
It was interesting how Mr. Orr danced around this. He put on his bankruptcy hat and didn't get into the politics. He said, I'm agnostic on this, I'm going to step back from it, which was probably a good move. But this is critical to this package. If this ends up, and we have a state representative on the record saying this could blow up the whole deal if the speaker doesn't back off, this is critical.
Who is that?
That is Fred Durhall, Democrat from Detroit. We asked him yesterday, could he blow this up? And he said, absolutely he could. And the speaker, given a chance to back off, said, no, he's not. This could be part of the negotiation dance that goes on. If he does back off, he's going to have something to save face in order to do it. We don't know what that is, and it has not reached critical mass yet, but it does complicate the formula for the governor and for Mr. Orr to line up votes, because everything was rolling along, singing a song. This thing actually had some momentum, the grand bargain, until he threw this bomb into the hornet's nest, which has changed the dynamics significantly.
I'll add that Mr. Bolger, right after the soundbite that we just heard, he was asked how he'd respond if city union money wouldn't be forthcoming, and he said, referring to a House vote here, quote, "It will absolutely impact our ability to go forward." Kevin Orr, is in town visiting with legislators. We've alluded to that. Yesterday was day one. He's at it again here today. Can any of you update us on how these discussions are going?
Sure. Well, as Tim mentioned, Orr's been kind of dancing around the union issue. Basically, he is just briefing lawmakers on what the city's latest plan of adjustment is for its bankruptcy case, and showing the momentum they've made, the negotiations that have already been completed. The unspoken line here is don't get in the way, but that's essentially the message I think he's brought to Lansing this week. He'll be back next week, in fact, as there's going to be a package introduced in the House, it looks like, that would pave the way for possible state participation.
A lot of parts to that, too, I read this morning. Ten parts to the funding package altogether?
Yeah, it's going to be a 10-bill package.
Ten bill.
Sure.
Yeah.
In addition to Bolger's call for union contributions, a lot of conservatives really want to see a lot of strings attached, post-bankruptcy oversight, which will, be part of any bankruptcy agreement anyways, but they want that in writing.
They're against a, quote, Detroit bailout, unquote.
Please don't use that word. The governor does not like
okay.
that, please.
Okay.
This is assistance for the city of Detroit.
Right.
A bailout, in the polling data that we've all seen, if you put the word bailout and ask the people, the numbers are just off the charts, don't do this. If you put it and phrase it in terms of helping retirees in Detroit, the numbers flip. Bailout is a critical word in this debate. Orr basically brought in both political parties yesterday. The Republican senators that we all talked to have one major concern. They do want this oversight. They want to be able to go back home and say, look, we did this for Detroit, but we've got a guarantee that Detroit in 5 years, 10 years, is not going to be back here again asking for more money. Mr. Orr was asked, do you have that guarantee? He doesn't like that word, because guarantees implies that I'm going to do something, and he might not be able to. So he said instead there are some safeguards sort of baked into this plan. The federal judge will maintain scrutiny of the package once Detroit, if they come out of bankruptcy, and you would have this oversight committee also keeping an eye on what's going on as well.
Senator Richardville told the Free Press he's confident in today's edition, he's confident he has enough votes in the Senate to pass this thing. When does the head counting, the serious head counting here, start?
Well, I think it already has.
Okay.
I mean, with an issue this big, the only problem is that nobody knows what the final deal is. So it's difficult to get clear commitments from people when you have so many moving parts.
And that is a different line from Richardville, because his line up to this point was, we can't cross the T's and dot the I's until we have some T's to cross and I's to dot, because they haven't seen the bill. And so for him to say he's got the votes on something that nobody's seen is rather bold, I would say.
We'll also point out,
and may also be wrong.
Just a couple of days ago, we'll also point out, just for context here, Detroit and 14 of its unions did reach a tentative agreement on a new five-year contract that may help hasten the conclusion of the city's bankruptcy. That still needs to be approved by about 3,500 union members. Let's turn to the minimum wage discussion here. This continues to be discussed, supported, and opposed this month. The group Raise Michigan continues its pursuit of about 250,000 signatures to put a measure before the legislature or on the ballot in November that would raise Michigan's minimum wage from $7.40 to $10.10. But last week we saw Eaton County Republican Senator Rick Jones put forth an alternative minimum wage measure. What is Mr. Jones proposing exactly?
I forget the exact numbers, but essentially it's like a 75% increase in the minimum wage. 75 cents. Excuse me.
75% would be quite different.
Sure, 75-cent increase.
That makes him a Democrat.
For general workers, and I think it's only about 10 cents for tipped employees. And that's the big key here. The Raise Michigan ballot proposal is seeking to eventually go to 10-10 for general and tipped employees, which is all these restaurant workers. Rick Jones says he has friends in the restaurant industry who just couldn't swallow an increase like that. So his proposal is really focused, I think, more on that tipped employee part than anything else.
Senator Jones acknowledges this is an effort to weaken momentum for the ballot proposal, which a lot of Republicans would presumably like. What was the response to his proposal from his fellow Republicans?
Well, Senate Majority Leader Randy Richardville was not impressed and doesn't support any kind of an increase. This is kind of a different response than back in 2006, the last time we saw a minimum wage increase, when Republicans ended up passing legislation for a smaller increase than what was going to be proposed, so that that issue would be taken off the table and Democratic turnout, hopefully, in their eyes, would have been decreased.
We're seeing a repeat of,
we
of
are,
that.
We are, but
the same
less
play.
Support.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly leaders behind the scene from the business community may be inclined to support a compromise, but there are so many strong conservatives in the legislature who find a minimum wage increase so absolutely abhorrent. I think it's a different legislature to try and get support for that than it was in 06.
In the end, though, is it important enough to Republicans to keep the measure off the ballot that Senator Richardville and others might change their tune in
well,
the not-so-distant future?
The Speaker
future?
Called in the business lobbyists last week. They had a closed-door meeting, and they decided that they're pretty much assuming this is going to be on the ballot. Now, remember, this is an initiative. This is just because the people vote for it doesn't mean it automatically takes effect. It comes back into the legislative arena, and they have 40 days to deal with this. In that 40 days, they could offer a compromise. What they concluded around the table, they do not have a message yet on how to fight this, and there may not be one. They tried the economic argument in New Jersey, and the minimum wage went up with 68% of the vote. So the economic argument that this will increase everybody's prices does not resonate. So they basically said, let's get back together. They did not rule out sitting down with the other side. I did talk to Frank Houston this week, who is running it. By the way, they're going to announce in the next couple of weeks that they have well over 100,000 signatures on their way to that number that they're looking for. And he said, I'd be willing to talk to them, but non-negotiable are taking the restaurant people out because he works for the restaurant people.
Right.
He would probably be out of work himself if he threw them under the bus. And also the inflationary automatic increase of the minimum wage, which is what he wants in this as well. And Mr. Jones doesn't like that. This is still, look, there's plenty of time to sit down at the table and find a compromise if lawmakers want to do that. Just how concerned are they about it being on the ballot? Well, 65% of the people say we'll vote yes. So that will get their attention.
Mm-hmm. It's been over a month now since the GOP majority House narrowly passed a proposal to expand the state's education achievement authority. The measure was sent to the Senate. What's been happening?
A lot of nothing, really. Nothing on the floor, anyways. We in the media have been playing the EA waiting game. Every day there are rumors that it could go up for a vote, and every day it does not go up for a vote. So the negotiations continue in the Republican caucus behind the scenes. It's not clear whether they had the votes. It sounds like they still might be a couple short. The thing is, the Senate doesn't want to change this bill and then send it back to the
They've
House.
They've already changed it once,
back
haven't
and forth.
They?
Exactly. Mm. So this has gone back and forth several times. So last week, Randy Richardville suggested they might actually introduce a companion bill, a separate bill with a new set of modifications or suggestions that would go along with the EAA bill. And they could take both of those up at the same time. We'll see if that happens.
And Tim, again, you got Republican Senator Brandenburg to admit he'll vote for EAA expansion in exchange for more support for a tax cut. So that's still on the table. What's on your radar for May?
For May?
Yes.
Nicer weather.
Mackinac Island. Do you expect to be able to get through the ice to Mackinac Island.
Or will we have a boat to go across?
You'd need an ice cutter.
Look, I think the folks in the legislature would like to have a nice agenda of finished stuff by the time they get to the island at the end of May, including maybe this Detroit. This is very optimistic, okay, the Detroit package, and obviously the budget would be well on its way. A lot of stuff to be done. May will be very aggressive. The budget will be at the top of the thing, but you're going to have this road package, which will start to move, and I think you're going to see this stuff come out of the House committee in a rather quick form. And, you know, the interesting thing about the legislative process, once they decide that they want to do something, they can do it in a half a day. It's getting up to that point, which becomes the interesting process, which they're trying to go through to find what they're going to do.
What kind of month do you expect May to be, Jonathan?
Well, as Tim mentioned, I think it's going to be a very busy week.
This administration set kind of a track record of having a budget done by June 1st.
Absolutely.
Too. So,
sure, and a lot of these talks are wrapped up in the budget. I mean, if they're going to send money to Detroit, where is that money going to come from? If they're going to do this road package, the House Appropriations Bill kind of baked in some of the assumptions from the Bolger Road deal. So it's all wrapped up together. It'll be hard to separate them.
And the X factor, May 15th, we have another revenue estimating conference. And if those numbers come in that we've got a pot of gold, Katie, bar the door, because then the budget, everybody will go nuts. My guess is it's not going to be a pot of gold, but there might be a little extra revenue, might even be a little less. But that is a key turning point in this budget debate as to what those numbers turn out to be.
Some of the recent monthly revenue estimates were actually below previous estimates. So that surplus that we've been hearing about might end up shrinking a little bit, which could certainly impact things.
Have the dynamics of any of the key political races changed this month? Senate, Snyder versus Schauer, Schuette versus whomever.
How about this 24 hours? I mean, John Conyers is the big news. Last night, WDIV reported that there may be an issue with his signature collection for
he
the petitions
may
that
have pulled him a Connor.
Okay. Would you think after 50 years he could get the name game down?
That's entered the vernacular.
Sure. It sounds like a couple of the petition circulators may not have been properly registered to vote, which is a requirement in these congressional races. So some of the signatures could be in question, depends how many. And who knows, Conyers might end up as a write-in candidate, which would be fascinating.
We have to let it go there. We want to thank all of our correspondents, WKAR-TV, Michigan Public Television's Tim Skubick, MLive Capital reporter Jonathan Osting, and Inside Michigan Politics Susan Demas. Thank you, one and all. Have a good day. ¶¶